All right. Telling a story today that is actually a very, very famous story. It's one of Jesus' stories that kind of made its way into modern culture. If you know nothing about God, if you know nothing about Jesus, I bet when I say the name of this story, it will resonate with you because you've heard it in some way, shape, or form. You've seen a TV show about it. You've seen a movie about it. You've heard somebody call somebody else this. Today we're going to talk about the story Jesus tells of the prodigal son. Right? We've all heard of this guy, the prodigal son, the bad boy, the black sheep, the guy who kind of goes away, disgraces his family. Maybe you've heard the story.
Maybe you've lived the story.
I don't know. Wow, why did I just say like that? That was weird. Let's agree that didn't happen. All right? How's that sound? Here's what we're going to do. We're going to jump right into the story because Jesus is a better storyteller than I am. And Jesus, because he was such a great storyteller, did you know that Jesus, literally every time he talked to people, every time he was in front of people preaching, he told a story? Bible tells us that every single time. I think it's because he knew we like stories and we can relate to stories, and Jesus is a really smart guy, and he really wanted us to understand what he had to say. So he tells a story, and like a great storyteller, he starts off with a bang, right? You gotta bring it right in. And so we're going to be today, if you have your Bibles, you can follow along. If not, they're going to be up on the screen. We're going to be in Luke chapter 15. And it starts in verse 11, and Jesus, because he wants to get his audience's attention, he starts off with a really big bang. Okay, here's what he says. He says, starting in verse 11, he says, a man had two sons. Wow. No, that's not the shocking part. A man had two sons. The younger son told his father, I want my share of your estate now, before you die. Now that was a shocking statement, especially to his audience, to the first century. I mean, just imagine a movie opens and there's a boardroom and you got two sons and the dad, he's getting old, looks a little run down, a little decrepit, but he's still got it. Older son, loyal by his side. Younger son, dad, come on, man. We got to make changes. We got to do this. Okay, fine. Just give me what's mine so I can go. I'm out of here. Now see, to Jesus' audience, it would have meant one of two things. One, he basically was saying, I wish you were dead. Okay, some commentators and theologians, that's what they think this guy was saying. He was saying, Dad, I wish you were dead, and since you won't die, why don't you go ahead and give me what's mine now so I can get on with my life. See you later. I don't think he was that mean. I don't think he really wanted his father to die. Here's really what I think was happening. I think he was basically saying to his father, which may be just as bad as, I wish you were dead. I think what he was saying to his father is, I don't trust you. I don't believe you want what's best for me. Now see, we all can't really relate to the whole, I wish my parents were dead thing. Hopefully you can't relate to that. But who in the room can relate when we say we had moments where we weren't so sure our parents had our best interest at heart? Teenagers, you better not lie. Because every day you think you know more than your mom and dad, and they don't want the best for you. When they say, no, you can't date that boy. No, you can't stay out that late. No, you cannot wear that. We think, oh, you're being so mean. It's because you don't trust that they want the best for you. That's what I think my man's doing here. I think my man is basically saying, look, Dad, the life that you've built for me, the life that you have planned, that you have spent time thinking about, it's not good enough because I don't really trust you. I don't really trust that you know me that well. I don't really trust that you want the best for me. I don't really trust you've got my best interest at heart. I would rather try this on my own. So, Dad gives him exactly what he asks for. Next verse. So his father agreed to divide his wealth between his sons. A few days later, this younger son packed all his belongings and moved to a distant land. So now here's the deal. The inheritance he would have gotten most likely would have been land. So not only did he say, Dad, give me my inheritance now, give me my land now, he then turned around and sold it to the highest bidder. That was the only way to convert land into money. And so he sells his inheritance and moves away to a distant land. So let's back up. Let's look at this. Here we got a guy, a younger son. His dad's obviously wealthy. You got to be wealthy to have an inheritance, right? So his dad's obviously wealthy. Obviously had a good life plan for him. He didn't trust it. He said, you know what? No, thank you. I'd rather go my own way. I'd rather try it. And if you ever heard this story before, you've heard it taught, or if you're thinking about it right now, we like to sit on the outside and judge this guy. We like to say, what were you thinking? How dare you do that? You're so crazy. Dad had everything there for you. He wanted to take care of you. Why would you turn your back on this guy? And I hope you're there. I really do. I hope you're like judging this guy right now because I got a bomb for you. Because I've read the whole story. In this story, the father represents God, right? The God of the universe. That's who the father is. So if you're quick, and I know you are, you'll get that. Well, if the father's God, and the son turned his son's us. The son's us. Every single one of us in this room, at some point, have looked at God. I just did a whole series on this and said, you know what? I know you got a plan. I know you got things figured out, but I'd rather try things myself. I'd rather go my own way. Right? Regardless of where you are in the room today, if you have been following Christ for 30 years, you still have had moments where you said, God, I'm going to do things my way. If you're in the room today and you don't know why you're here, somebody drug you here, you heard about this thing called the gospel, and they've been inviting you for 2 months, and you thought, I'll go one time and shut them up. If you're here today, man, I'm so glad you're here. I really am. I don't say that facetiously. I don't know if that's really a word, but I said it. I'm stoked you're here. Because whether you believe it or not, you are telling God you know more than he does. You are telling God, I want to go my own way. I want to try this on my own. Give me what's mine so I can go live my life. So every one of us in the room can identify with the son. We all are this guy now or at some point in our lives. So there's something for everybody today. So let's keep going. Verse 13. Like I said, a few days later, the younger son packed all his belongings, moved to a distant land, and Jesus doesn't even waste any time. And there he wasted all his money in wild living. Now see, this is where it gets good. This is where it gets interesting. Right. This is where, if it was a movie, they'd show this montage and the music would be, Mama told me not to come, right? Like, just things would be going crazy. Mama told me not to come. I mean, that's what would happen. I mean, because the son, this guy who knew more than his dad, he knows what's up. He's brilliant. He knows what's up. Dad's dumb, man. Dad doesn't know what he's doing. Dad doesn't know what he's talking about. I want to do things my own way. So he takes off to a distant land. And look what happened with these humongous big plans he had. Blew all his money. Now, I don't know how it happened. He could have gone to Vegas and bet big, which would have been dumb. He maybe he moved and he bought a house that he couldn't afford, but he got a really super low introductory interest rate. Anybody done that? And then when the rate changed, uh-oh, I can't afford the payment. And the Hummer sitting in his driveway, he ain't made a payment on that in 3 months. Maybe he invested poorly, or maybe he just took all the money he had, never got a job, and went out and got drunk every night. I don't know. Jesus doesn't tell us what he did. I just know he lost all his money on wild living. Now, if you've heard this story before, you may skip over this point, but I have to make it because it's so crucial. That there's a little piece you can miss if you're not careful. Because we read this story, and because it happens in a sentence, we think it took a sentence. We think like he shows up, makes one bad move, and he's broke. Well, I don't think that's how it happened. See, I think it took a while for him to lose all his money. It took weeks, months, maybe even years to lose all his money. And during that time, guess what? He wasn't miserable. He enjoyed his wild living. Let's just call it what it is. He had a blast. He had a great time. I mean, he wouldn't have continued doing it if it wasn't fun, right? And I say to you today, you wouldn't continue to insist that that you're smarter than God if there weren't moments where you really felt like you were. If there weren't moments where your way seemed to work. See, there's always a space. There's always a space, a grace period between sin, which is what the Son did, it's what we all do when we go our own way, when we say we know more than you, God, we're going to try things. There's always a grace period between sin and the consequences of that sin. There's always a grace period. And you know what that grace period is called? It's called pleasure. It's called party time. It's called fun. You would not continue to do those things if for a season they didn't feel right. But, and that's a big old but, as our boy's about to learn, that period always ends. Always. You know why? I said it the entire last series. Because God is God, and we're not. And so when we go against God's way, when we turn our back and we say, we got this, it's going to be fun. We're living La Vida Loca. But then we're like Ricky Martin now. Nobody knows where he is. Nobody's ever heard of him anymore. He's probably a good guy. I don't know him. So look at this, verse 14. About the time his money ran out, a great famine swept over the land, and he began to starve. It's almost comical on the outside, right? All right, we're really glad we're not this guy because we can mock him and laugh at him. I mean, here's this guy. He literally, first scene of the movie, he's in a suit in his boardroom telling his dad, I know more than you. I could run this company better than you. You know, you're old. You're crazy. You're still using a BlackBerry. We ought to be on iPhones. And he says, I want to go my own way. And look, this brilliant guy with these brilliant plans, he's starving. Because he ran out of money and he didn't ever anticipate, wait, the economy might change. That sounds like Myrtle Beach. We were building condos left and right in the mid-2000s. Can I get an amen? But it does. The recession hits, just like today. Think of our economy today. Dude's out of money, and all the HR managers, they got a freeze on hiring. They're not hiring anybody else. They're laying off. Dude can't even get a job waiting tables in Myrtle Beach. That's how bad it is. See, his actions, his decision to go against God, his decision to try things his own way, they're beginning to catch up with him. The consequences are starting to mount up. All these poor choices he's made are starting to weigh him down, and he finds himself in utter despair and starving. May I lovingly say to you today that I believe there are some, if not many of you in this room, that are starving. The consequences of your decisions are weighing on you. You really don't know where else to turn. You thought you had the plan. You thought you had it all figured out. It worked for a season. But now you know you are not going the right way. But you do not know what to do. And you're starving. And I want you to know God has hope for you today. God has an answer for you today. And we'll get to that in a minute. Let's get back to our guy. See, he put his faith in his own mind, his money. He'd not trusted in his father. He's now in humongous trouble. Now, if I'm this dude, if I'm this guy, I'm going home. I'm thinking, this is crazy. I need some food. But my boy's not going home. My boy's too proud. Or quite frankly, by this point, he probably thinks his father would have nothing to do with him. Because in that day and time, telling your father, I wish you were dead, wasn't really looked kindly upon. So here's what he does, verse 15. He persuaded a local farmer to hire him. So he begs a farmer, dude, please give me a job. Please give me a job. And the man said, you want a job? Really? You want a job? I'll give you a job. He sent him to his field to feed the pigs. At this point, Jesus' audience, his first century listeners, would have gasped in horror. If they were Southern, they'd have sown, "I declare." This would have been shocking to them because in the first century Jewish culture, and even today, pigs are considered an unclean animal. Right? You don't eat pig, they're not kosher, but you weren't even supposed to associate with a pig. You weren't supposed to touch a pig. You weren't supposed to be around a pig. But my boy is not only around them, dude's feeding them. Who's ever fed pigs before? It's not pretty. You can't do it clean. You just kind of got to get in there with it. Got to get the old out. Got to get the, oh gosh, it's just so gross. But look at verse 16. The young man became so hungry that even the pods he was feeding the pigs looked good to him. But no one gave him anything. This dude had everything. He had it all figured out. His dad didn't know anything. He knew everything. He was going to go and he was going to create a new life for himself that was going to be awesome because he's the man. And now he is literally feeding pigs. Now, to put this another way, he has sunk lower than he ever imagined possible. This is something I guarantee you, as he was packing things up and telling his servants goodbye and shaking hands with his older brother and giving one of these to his dad as he walked out the door. And as he was walking down the road with the money on his back from the sale he had just made, it never crossed his mind that one day he would be in a pig pen feeding pigs. Ever in his life did he think that would happen. But folks, that's what happens when you tell God you know more than he does. Pleasure might reign supreme for a season, but it always ends. The consequences always catch up. And before we know it, we find ourselves feeding the pigs. Again, I believe there are many of you in this room right now in your life, you're feeding pigs somehow. You've sunken lower than you ever thought you would. You are doing things you never imagined possible. Sometimes you wake up in the morning, look in the mirror, and you don't even recognize your life. Maybe you're the person who people think you're the life of the party because you go out every night and let's just be straight today. You get so drunk, you black out a lot of the time. And they think it's hilarious. But what they don't know is the reason you get that drunk is because you're miserable and you've contemplated suicide a few times. And the only thing that makes it go away is blacking out. Maybe you are a husband and you're married and let's just be frank today. You haven't had sex in about 6 months with your spouse. And you keep telling her it's because you're tired and it's because of work. But come on, let's be straight. We know the truth. It's you're addicted to pornography. And you're so wrapped up in that, and you can't shake that. You can't even look at your wife anymore, and you feel so guilty, you don't know what to do with yourself. But every night you just go back in and feed the pigs more. Maybe you're in the room today and you're a wife and you're a mother. And you really like stuff, and you really like having nice stuff, and you really like having new stuff. And you and your husband have talked, and you know you can't really afford it, but new things start popping up anyway, and so you have to lie about where they came from. And what you're doing to pay for those things is you've taken out credit cards your husband doesn't know about. And you're hiding them from your husband, and you really, it's getting difficult for you to eat. It's getting difficult for you to rest at night because you have no idea how you're going to handle those. You really don't know. But you know, you just got to have that stuff, right? And the things you're contemplating doing to pay off those cards, Maybe you innocently started a relationship on Facebook with an ex. It was innocent. Just wanted to catch up. They posted some new pics, and I couldn't see it unless we were friends. And so I had to become friends so I could see the new pictures of the kids. And I just needed to send them a message just to say, hey. And then they were going to be in town, and they wanted to have coffee. And what's wrong with that? What's wrong with it is you're now having an affair with them. And you're hiding it, and you're lying to your spouse, and one day your kids are going to find out, and your life's going to be destroyed. And you're going to find yourself feeding pigs. Or maybe you have a boss at work who trusts you a little too much with the petty cash and with the money, and you kind of started stealing from that. Because again, you, man, come on. I got myself into this. I got to get myself out. You live a life where you've created so many lies and you've lied to so many people, you don't even know what's the truth anymore. What are you doing right now? What are you, guys, if you can't honestly reflect on this, then, you know, come back next week, we'll try again. What is it in your life right now you're doing you never imagined you would? And I'm not believing everybody in the room is here today. Maybe not. But I'd be willing to bet for the vast majority of you that don't believe in God, your life is not where you thought it would be right now. It has not matched up to the plan you had. And I'd be willing to bet you're probably doing some things you never thought you would. You're probably feeding some pigs a little bit. So let's see what our boy does. Verse 17, when he finally came to his senses. That's one of my favorite sentences in the Bible. When he finally came to his senses, he said to himself, at home, even the hired servants have food enough to spare, and here I am dying of hunger. This was probably the third time he tried to eat the pig pod. He's like, yeah, I can't do it. That's disgusting. I can't do that. And he thinks to himself, dude, dad's servants have plenty of food. So I can go back and I can maybe get some food as well. So verse 18, I'll go home to my father and say, see, he has a speech that he's going to rehearse and prepare because he feels like he has to do it just right to get his father's affection back. He says, Father, I've sinned against both heaven and you. I am no longer worthy of being called your son. Please take me on as a hired servant. See, he thinks he's blown it with his dad. He thinks it's over. He thinks because I turned my back on dad, because I said I know more than you, dad's never going to take me back. So the best I can hope for is I'm going to go back and I'm going to work for his affection. I'm going to work to earn his favor back in my life. I'm going to start as a servant, but hopefully if I work hard enough and I do well enough and I give enough and I pray enough and I attend church enough, maybe he'll like me again. Oops, I'm talking to some of y'all now. That's what our boy's doing here. He genuinely thinks that's the best he can do. Is go back to his father groveling, and hopefully if he works hard enough and he's good enough and he stands with just one foot in the air just right, maybe God will like him. I mean, the father will like him again. So our boy starts walking home. He starts actually rehearsing his speech, I believe. He's going over in his head what it's going to be like when he sees his father. He imagines he's going to have to go to the front door and knock because it's not his house anymore. So he's going to have to knock on the door, wait to be welcomed in by the servants. The servants are going to call him in and say, your father's waiting. And he's going to have to go to the boardroom. Dad's going to be at one end of the table in a suit looking all stern. And he's going to have to come into the other end of the table, hat in hand, literally hat in hand. And he's going to have to get on one knee and grovel for his father. That's what he believes in. And be honest today, if you don't know the story, that's what we would think, right? That's what should happen. This guy has completely and totally turned his back on his father. He said, I don't need you. He kind of said, I wish you were dead. I know more than you. I'm smarter than you. I'm going to try things my own way. And only because nothing else worked is he now coming back to his father. Of course, the father is going to use this as an opportunity to teach his son a lesson and to punish him and to kind of rub his nose in it a bit. Right? I mean, right? Isn't that what should happen? That's clearly what our boy's expecting. Verse 20. So he returned home to his father. And while he was still a long way off, his father saw him coming. Well, now this is already weird. How did his dad saw him coming? Why is dad looking for him? I thought dad should be mad. Dad should be like, you're dead to me. I don't want anything to do with you. You've betrayed me. But no, Jesus says, wait, no. No, dad was watching for him. Dad woke up every morning and had rearranged his desk so that it was at a window, so that all day long he could look out. He had gone to the highest point in the house so that he could see the farthest. Hoping, praying, this might be the day he comes home. The servants had started making fun of dad. They kind of thought it was sad. Oh, look at him. He thinks he's going to come home. He's not coming home. But dad never stopped looking. See, even though the son gave up hope in his father, the father never gave up hope in his son. Ever. He never gave up hope. So dad's up there and he sees his son. He sees him walking, and I want you to see what he does. What we imagine this guy is going to be something. Look what he does. Filled with love and compassion, he ran to his son, embraced him, and kissed him. This guy was supposed to be mean. This guy was supposed to exact vengeance. This guy was supposed to say, I told you so. And Jesus says, no, he runs to him and kisses him. Now, running doesn't make that big a deal to us. If we run, we look a little silly. But in Jesus' time, men of that stature did not run, ever. Because to run, you had to lift up your tunic. You had to expose part of your leg. That was a no-no. I don't think Jesus makes mistakes. I think the point's in there for a reason. He wants us to know that this man publicly humiliated himself in an effort to reach his son. Trust me, when the head of the village runs, the villagers notice. Everybody in the town had seen this dude run out there. And he runs out and he embraces his son and he kisses him. Son doesn't know what's going on. He's confused. This has got to be a trick. So he goes into a speech, the rehearsed speech. He says, son said to him, Father, I have sinned against both heaven and you, and I am no longer worthy of being called your son. Now, what I really think is he's saying it as his father's hugging him and he's kissing on him. He's like, Father, I'm not worthy to be called your son. What's going on? Why are you hugging me? Dad's not even listening. He's not even paying attention. He's hugging his son. He's kissing his son. He then turns around. And his father said to his servants, because dude, when the master of the house runs, you better believe you better run after him. So his servants, they said, we got to go. And they start running too. And they take off. And so they're all right there. And he says, quick, bring me the finest robe in the house and put it on him. Get a ring for his finger and sandals for his feet and kill the calf we've been fattening. We must celebrate with a feast. Now, if you're tracking with me today, please don't miss this part. Please don't miss this. The son didn't even have to speak. He didn't have to make a fancy speech. He didn't have to stand on one leg and say, I'm going to obey you for life and I'm never going to be bad again and I'm going to give to the poor. And if you just do this for me, Jesus, I'll serve you for the rest of my life. No. All he had to do was come home, because coming home was an admission that, Dad, you're right and I'm wrong. And I'm sorry. See, the son, he wanted to come back and earn his way into his father's heart. He wanted to earn it. But the father says, no, you don't have to earn it. All you have to do is acknowledge I was right and you were wrong. And when you do, I will restore you to full sonship. Sonhood. That's what was happening. That's why he said, get the robe. That's why he said, get the ring. He said, you ain't coming back as a servant. You're not coming back to earn it. If you're coming back, you're going to be my son again. Get the robe, get the ring, get the sandals. It's time to party. It's time to party. And do you know why? Verse 24, for this son of mine, he was dead. And he has now returned to life. He was lost. But now he's found. He was lost. But now he's found. He was dead, but now he's alive. Not because of a speech, but because he simply acknowledged in his heart, "You're right, and I'm wrong. You're God, and I'm not." The son came home. He was made a son again. He didn't come home to condemnation. He didn't come home to, "I told you so." He didn't come home to, "This will be fine when you earn it, when you do these things." He just came home. Folks, I believe with all my heart that to many of you in the room, God is screaming at you right now. He is doing everything he can to get your attention. And he is screaming, "Stop feeding the pigs. Stop going your own way. We all know your life is not what it needs to be. You don't have to earn it. I'm not going to beat you up about it. Just come to your senses and come home." I fully believe many of you in the room today will do just that. Today is your day. And in a moment, you are going to pray a prayer and you are going to come home. And you are going to begin the life God has always wanted you to have. Because let's be honest. Every one of us in the room have said, "Give me what's mine. I'm going to go my own way." It's called sin. We've all done it. And see, because of that sin, what happened is a barrier was erected between us and God, because God is perfect. God can't be around sin. God can't even touch sin. And so God had to separate himself from us. But he wanted to have a relationship with us. So here's what he did. Over 2,000 years ago, he sent his son Jesus to live a perfect, holy, sinless life. Walked the earth for 33 years. On a Thursday night, he was hanging out with his buddies having dinner. He then went to pray. That night, he was arrested. He had a crazy trial. He was beaten. The next day, he was nailed to a tree and he died. And here's what happened. When he died, every sin, every mistake, every time we've ever said, "God, we got this. We're smarter than you. We're going to go our own way." God took every one of those mistakes we've ever made in our lives or ever will make, and he put them on his son, Jesus, on that cross. And he said, "The penalty for those mistakes I pay right here, right now, in the death of my son." And then Sunday morning, Jesus conquered the grave. Dude walked out. Because he was God. And by him walking out, it means that we don't have to walk in the darkness anymore. We can actually live the life that God has created us to live. I beg you to hear me today with all my heart. If you're in the room and you don't know about this, this God thing sounds weird, you're not sure, you like your own way. Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, it's tough. But you're not sure. I beg you to hear me. It's not a fairy tale. It's not a myth. It's real. It happened over 2,000 years ago. And the God of the universe wants to radically transform your life today. And here's what I believe. I believe many of you in the room right now, you've never thought it before. But right now, this moment, for some reason, you can't explain it. You believe it's real too. Yeah, your brain has questions, but who cares about those? Your heart is about to beat out of your chest right now. You can't imagine what's about to happen right now. And it's because the God of the universe is trying to get a hold of your life. He's trying to shake you. And he's trying to say, "Come to your senses. Come home. I know you don't have all the answers. I know you're in trouble. We'll figure it out together. You may have gotten yourself in this mess, but I want to get you out because I'm your dad. And I love you. And you think I'm in this room waiting to judge you. Well, now what I'm actually doing is I'm standing at the window, pacing, searching, looking every single day, longing and hoping that today will be the day that you come home. What you don't know is that I've been orchestrating your steps for weeks, months, to make sure you were here right now in this moment. Because today is the day that God wants to make himself real to you. You are not here by accident. You're here because the God of the universe orchestrated things to make sure you could hear from him today. So come to your senses, folks. Come home today." I invite everybody right now to bow your heads with me and close your eyes. If you're in the room today and you would say, "Yes. Yes. I've been living life the way I don't like. My life is not where I want it to be. I have told God I know more than him. I don't know all the answers. But today I'm going to try. Today I'm going to say, all right, I'll come home." What I invite you to do right now is pray in your heart as I pray aloud. Just repeat after me. "God, I admit that you are smarter than I am. And I am sorry that I have tried things my own way. Please forgive me. Please let me come home and start over with you. Starting today, God, I want to try to live life for you. I want to listen to you. I want to make you the king of my life. And I'm going to try to serve you. Thank you for sending your son to pay the price for me. I accept it. And I commit to live for you. Now, I want you to know, if you just pray that prayer in your heart, heaven's having a party right now. Because some more sons and daughters just came home. And there's a couple of things I want to ask you to do for me. Number one, I want to know if God changed your life today. I want to know if you began a relationship with Jesus today. So, with all, every head bowed, eyes closed, nobody's looking around yet. I want you to publicly acknowledge what happened in your heart. Just let me know. I'm going to count to three. And when I count to three, I just want you to shoot your hand up in the air as high as you can get it, as fast as you can. Don't think about it. Don't hesitate. This is your way of publicly saying, yes, I don't have all the answers, but I came home today. Today is the beginning of a new life. So get ready. Get them up in the air. One, two, three. Shoot your hands up in the air. Keep them up. Shoot them up. Shoot them up. Keep it going. Keep them up. Come on. God's moving in your heart. God wants to change lives today. Keep them up. Amen. 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 Now everybody look at me. You have a connection card there. Everybody take out the connection card and wave it at me. Let me see it. Connection cards. Connection cards. All right. Here's what I want you to do. If you prayed that prayer today, or if you want to talk to somebody about praying that prayer, if you want to be a part of that, fill out that card. There's a little box there that says, today I became a Christ follower. Check that box. And here's what we're going to ask you to do. When we dismiss today, everybody turn around, look at the back. There's a table back there. There's people with shirts on that say, new you. Eric's waving. They have a gift for you. All right? It's not a survey. They don't want to take all your time. They have a gift for you. That's all they have. So what I want you to do is I want you to take that card, I want you to give it to them, and I want you to accept the gift. Now, here's the deal. A lot of you are going to walk out and not do it. No. Do it. Do it. The God of the universe is willing to be nailed to a tree naked for you. All right? There is no reason for you to be ashamed or embarrassed in any way. In any way for you to turn this in. And by the way, they had their eyes open, so they saw you raise your hand anyway. So if you don't, they're going to grab you anyway. And it's because we care about you. We want to get this life started out on the right foot. You see the shirt there that says, new you. Began a new life today. You are a new person today. And it happened here, which means it's on us to make sure you grow up in Christ. Now, Wellspring, if you're here today, this is just the beginning. We're going to keep this up for 3 more weeks. I believe this is just the beginning of what God wants to do. Saying it for months. As part of a church, we are a part of the only organization in the history of mankind that has been guaranteed success by the God of the universe. So we win. Love you guys. If you accept your Christ today, please go talk to the new you people. They'll be so lonely back there. This is just the beginning.